Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of When Push Comes to Shove. Today I am honoured to be speaking to Kiki Hansard. She trained me as a doula in 2009, so a long time ago. So I'm very, very pleased to have Kiki with us today. Kiki, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much, Nikita, and thank you so much for inviting me to come and chat to you today.
We're delighted to have you. So, as you know, When Push Comes to Shove is a movement, a channel. We're making a documentary in April. So we're talking to as many people in the birth world as possible, and you being the pinnacle of the doula world, we'd love to know about your opinion on the maternity system that we currently have, and just tell us a bit about yourself, how you've got into being a doula and your role in the birth world. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. Well, I can't believe it's that long ago, Nikita, that you did the doula course. That's amazing. Yeah. And we've kind of touched base now and again through that time. So I'm really impressed by what you're doing here. So I trained as a doula in 2002. So I've been a doula, well, it's my 19th year, but the last 8 years I've been mainly focusing on doula training. So training other women and people to become doulas. But this year, or last year, actually, forgot we're in a new year now, when the whole COVID stuff and everything happened, it was the first time I felt like as a doula, we need to speak up. Like we need to, we've always said like we're not campaigners, we don't, you know, we support the clients that we look after to have like a positive birth experience and postnatal period. But what happened last year with all the restrictions actually prompted us at the Birth Bliss Academy to start the But Not Maternity campaign. I'm sure you come across that.
I hashtag you in everything I post. So yeah, But Not Maternity, amazing hashtag, well done.
Yeah,
so saw you on the news on that. That was awesome. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, no, and it was at the time it felt really good, you know, because it was the time when things were lifting and maternity services were still not changing. That's why we had the But Not Maternity hashtag. But now, moving into this year and where we are right now, it's, I guess, things are a little bit more difficult because we are in a lockdown. But so that's my thoughts at the current moment. But looking back, to be honest, it's always been quite a challenge for a lot of women and birthing people in the system. And I think basically it comes from a lack of understanding and knowledge about what you are, what you're allowed to do. I'm sure you've heard that word a few times. like I'm not allowed to have a home birth because it's my first baby, or yeah, I had to be induced and it just ended up in, you know, this birth I didn't want. And I think that's a real challenge in terms of women and birthing people knowing their options and knowing that actually they can choose what they want.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's true. I mean, there is no, the informed consent is rare, because you're only informed as of the information in front of you. So if they're reading out guidelines, that's not informed consent. That is guidelines, and it's not evidence-based for the most part. So women don't know this. And I just think we've got into a position now where something needs to change urgently, and it has to come from people, not, you know, not from within the system, because the system is cares about the system, and that seems to be it. So I spoke to an NHS midwife, and she said she would actually be very comfortable delivering breech vaginal babies, but she said there's no point saying anything to women, because what happens is they go from scan to obstetrician, and then there's no, like, she doesn't really get a say in it, you know. She may well feel comfortable, but she doesn't actually get to speak to the patients that have this variation of normal. And then I spoke to another obstetrician who said, I would love to say to women, I'm happy to do a vaginal breech, but they are so worried that when the woman goes into labor and comes into hospital, she's not going to be there. And the first thing they're going to do is like, what? Take you off for a C-section. So within the system is not a place that change can happen. And it has to be everyone saying, well, actually, here are my options. I'd like to discuss them more. Can I have some evidence-based information? And, you know, maybe AIMS and birthrights will become the first port of call rather than just looking at NHS guidelines. And they are just that, guidelines.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the number one thing that most pregnant people and women don't realise, that these are guidelines. They're not things that you have to do, because they're not presented as such. They are literally, you know, obviously when you're working within the system, you will give those guidelines, and because that's what you need to do. So I think it might be helpful to say that, you know, when you talk to pregnant women about guidelines rather than this is what we're going to do, which is usually what the conversation is. And I also think it's really, I do agree that we need to see a change from the women and the birthing people themselves, like to stand up and say, look, we know that it doesn't have to be like this. But for that to happen, like, it's so important that information and knowledge about childbirth starts long before you're actually going to have your baby, because by then you already kind of grown up as a woman, worried about your body's failing. You know, you have an incompetent cervix, you have, you know, a lazy uterus, you have all these terms that are applied to our body. And when we become pregnant, we worry that something's going to go wrong. So whilst we want to encourage everyone to stand up and say, look, I don't want to do it like this, there must be a different way, it's really difficult to reach, you know, your mainstream pregnant person, for them to understand actually childbirth isn't dangerous. If you got a healthy pregnancy, you know, giving birth, you know, according to the birthplace study, you know, that showed that you're 99.56, I think it was, or 57% safe. So like, it's less than a 0.5% risk that anything's going to happen to you. Very similar to you going out in a car every day, you know, so it's understanding that actually fundamentally it's not dangerous to give birth if you're a healthy person. And then of course you have variations of birth, when, like, you're talking about breech birth or twin birth. Yeah, so I was saying, like, even if you have more complex issues in your pregnancy, like gestational diabetes or anything else, take those things into account, but still it's not as dangerous as women and families believe childbirth to be. Yes, it can be, but in our country, we're lucky in the UK that it's not as dangerous as it would be somewhere else, where you don't have the same health system, you don't have the same lifestyle, you know. So I think that's the number one thing people need to understand, because it is so scary for women to take responsibility themselves. They'd rather someone say, you have to do this.
It is scary. And women tend to do a lot more research on a car they're going to buy, you know, because they want to hand over their birth, give it to someone else. You know, I don't want to be responsible for this. And I can see why, because let's face it, it's a very new thing, but birth's gone into hospital, and you associate hospital with ill, being unwell. Yeah. And for some reason, birth has gone into hospital. Everyone's on it, rather than just the high risk women going in. It's become standard, so no wonder people see it as a risky thing. And, you know, they don't have the standard antenatal information that I think everyone should have. It will take less than 5 minutes to explain basic birth physiology, the role of oxytocin. And I think people would concern themselves less with what if something goes wrong, if they understand why things go right.
Yeah. And I think that birth physiology is an important one, because the majority of people don't understand that. They don't realize we're born with the ability to give birth, just like we can digest food and breathe and cough and sneeze and all those things that keep us alive. And it's understanding that you also are a different person when you're in labor. A physiological birth means physically you are different, because you have different hormones in your body to help with labor, and therefore you can't compare it to anything else. So, you know, when you have people saying, well, why would you want to give birth without pain medication? You know, you wouldn't want to have a tooth out without pain medication.
Not the same.
It's not, because your physiology is different. You have loads of these different hormones, that, like the oxytocin, which will help with some of the management of the sensations, and they also cause the contractions. But also you have, you know, your own endorphins. Enkephalins, they're called, actually, that are released together with the oxytocin to help manage the sensations of your muscles working. Oxytocin, we have hormones helping us with the sensations of the uterus working.
which we don't have when we go to see a dentist to have a tooth pulled out. That's the first thing. But also, it's not natural to have teeth pulled out. Yeah. You know, you're not meant to have your teeth pulled out, yeah. But you are meant to have babies. You know, that's a natural process. So I think we need to get away from all this comparing to, you know, and scaring women that it's going to be really painful. Pardon me.
Also, I wouldn't be able to describe my life as painful.
No, exactly.
It was. But I had every medical intervention under the sun, and it was excruciating. I wanted her dad to put a pillow over my face. But with this one, there was nothing. It was so easy. It was beautiful. I loved it. I couldn't say it was painful. It was just intense.
Yeah, no, exactly that. So we need more stories like that as well, because we tend to hear stories that are frightening. And often those stories also happen because women feel so out of control, or they don't feel like they are prepared for what's actually going to happen when you go to have a baby.
Mm.
And I think that's another issue that we could really make a difference if women understood that you can literally change your mind about everything, that you don't have to have a plan. You know, writing a plan is often, you know, can make it worse in a sense, because you can't really plan for a birth. You can have preferences. You can call it a care plan, like things that you would like people to do or not do. So how you want the people around you in the birth situation to treat you. But this idea that we have to plan for it, and then you get into the birth and maybe something that you really wanted to happen doesn't happen, you start losing faith and you start panicking and you start thinking, oh, nothing's going to plan. When actually you don't have to decide. Like, you don't have to decide before, or I'm going to have an epidural, or I'm not going to have an epidural. Just go and see how it goes. So I think that would also be helpful. This idea that we can somehow orderly in our thinking neocortex plan and organize something that happens.
I was just going to mention, I remember you discussing that a lot when I was training with you, the neocortex, and that's not a part of your brain you need to be in when you're giving birth. So, you know, all that organization stuff, you need to be in your primitive part, you know, the like the animalistic side, where you're not thinking, you're just being, and you're allowing your body to do what it was meant to do. And you don't need to think. Like, when you do start thinking, that's when adrenaline kicks in, which will kick out your oxytocin for sure, leave you with white womb, and you're ready to fight or fly. That's what you want to be doing when you're in labor. But unfortunately, that's the stories you hear, because when hospital interfere with birth, and I'm talking unnecessary intervention here, not life-saving and essential intervention, if they're doing it on everyone that walks through the hospital doors, is it a surprise when things go wrong?
Yeah, no, exactly. And when you think about it, Nikita, when other mammals give birth, so, you know, if you're a farmer and you have sheep and you have cows, and you know that every spring they're going to be having their offsprings, we know that we mustn't disturb them. You know, we shouldn't go up and shine a torch and shout at them or interfere or touch them even, because we know we can disturb that physiology, which means that baby or those little lambs and calves will be born, because that's the natural course of things. That's how we have survived, or they have survived. And we are the same, we're mammals too. And yet women, birthing people, are disturbed so much all the time in labor. And then we wonder why things get more complicated or we have more interventions, when that's exactly the same thing that would happen if we did the same to all the lambs, all the sheep that are having lambs. So I think that's the other thing. Also, somehow we survived. You know, we've survived for millions of years, despite no one doing internal examinations, or despite no one's given us scans, or despite all the different things that happen to pregnant women now. So it's kind of, we have to go back to the basics. Somehow things were actually right and working fine.
I say this a lot, but people come back at me with, oh, you're a hippie, and you know, we've moved on now. And they usually bring up, well, we used to die in childbirth. Well, actually, if you look at decent studies, it will show that the main cause for maternal infant mortality is poverty.
And yeah, and that still happens today.
Yeah. And then the next thing that why things go wrong, which I find this so abhorrent, is unnecessary medical intervention. Then they have to save you or your baby, and then they expect a wow, thanks. But if that didn't start, that process didn't begin in the first instance, and they were just left to just be in their moment, why, we wouldn't see this. We wouldn't see the same problems over and over again. We're really going down the road like America at the moment. It's, midwives are becoming more of a role of an obstetric nurse and doulas. But I tell you what, this is a warning to doulas. If we carry on trying to take the role of midwives, which we should not be doing, we're going to end up with a governing body and more governing bodies and more governing bodies. And this is what midwives now are fighting with the NMC. They're too afraid to speak out. They're too afraid to do their job and help people who are not fitting in with the guidelines because they're going to get referrals to the NMC.
Yeah, it's wrong. Yeah. That's the thing that happens. You obviously with midwifery, you need to have some kind of framework, and you do with doulas as well. But I think you also have to remember that if everyone's coming from the right angle, like as in wanting to support, if we put women and birthing people in the center of our care, then we shouldn't have so many of these problems. And also remembering that we don't have to take over. It's not that women can't decide for themselves what's right for them and their babies. And I think that's the whole issue, that we kind of infantilize, or kind of, it's this paternalistic view that we need to tell you what's best for you, instead of trusting women to do that. And I think by letting go of some of that control in the sense of, but we need to tell her, because if we don't tell her that this could happen, then if that, you know, what do we do when she then comes and sues us when something goes wrong? It's less likely to happen if you own your own decisions.
Yeah.
And I remember someone saying that to me. I'd much, much rather make a wrong decision and everything goes wrong and it was my decision than actually having listened to someone else. The same thing happens, but this time I knew if I had been able to, like, take responsibility, it would have been nicer than actually knowing I'm in this situation now because I listened to someone else. So I guess,
but it's all that people will be scratching their heads going, well, there has to be blame somewhere. We have to point fingers. You know,
yeah,
you're right, women do need to take responsibility, and it would be nice if that happened, but making a decision is better than no decision at all, because you're giving your birth to someone else, and that's denying you a hell of an experience. I think you can take responsibility, but you have to have information to do that.
If you then choose to do what you're being advised by your medical team, then that's fine.
Yeah,
but you still feel like you own that decision. And going back to interventions, and you know, people or women used to die in childbirth, they still do in many countries of the world, and we're lucky that doesn't happen so much in the UK anymore. At least if you're white, you know, if you're black or mixed ethnicity or Asian, then you know your chances are a lot higher that you might have more problems during pregnancy and childbirth. But it is good. We're not saying that it's bad to have interventions, because, and they do save lives. However, it's bad to have interventions when they didn't have to be there in the first place. That's when we get into trouble.
Yeah. A friend of mine who's an independent midwife, she put up a post today about she's sick of seeing the word emergency cesarean section.
Yeah.
It was just an unplanned cesarean section. So many women are leaving their birth experience going, I had to have an emergency C-section.
Yes.
Is it an emergency? But that doesn't help you. They're being indoctrinated with fear. It was an emergency. My body failed me. Like the real emergencies, abruption cord prolapse, you know, they're so, so rare. But then people are being coined with, oh, this was an emergency, it had to happen. But the problem is, yes, they are being afraid of being sued. But guess what's going to happen eventually? Women are going to start suing the hospital for unnecessary intervention and not giving them information about the role of the human microbiome and what how will it affect their baby after it's born. Yeah. And not yeah. telling them that if you have syntocinin, it's probably going to put your baby into some sort of stress. You know, and not telling them all of this. And, well, you can birth at home, but here are the risks, and this is not
exactly.
But they're going to turn full circle eventually.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's so much that needs to happen in terms of education for children about the, you know, how it works, childbirth.
Yeah.
And breastfeeding is another big thing. So it's normalized. Like this, it's not difficult to explain birth physiology to a young adult or even a child. It's quite straightforward. They understand how the animals in the world give birth. So it's not that you need to complicate it. And then we also need to I don't know how you change the system, but the NHS, they're not listening. Why are so many midwives leaving? Why are so many obstetricians and other staff working in maternity so full, you know, post-traumatic stress, you know, hating going to work? Where is that all coming from? The bullying that goes on a lot, especially with the midwifery, is that all those things, those need to be sorted too. And number one, you need to kind of back away a bit and look at what is our role. What actually is our role as midwives and as doctors and as doulas? What is it that we're here to be doing? What is our job? It's not just about a live babe and a live mum. Of course, that is like a given. That's not an aim. That's like that needs to that that's what we expect. But what about all the other things that hello, am I still there?
Yeah, you're here.
Yeah, sorry. What about the other thing, like the psychological impact on the mother, which then leads to difficulties with bonding, perhaps, you know, a really traumatic birth experience, more likely to find it more difficult for the mum to bond with the baby. The whole family will struggle more, and long term, that's going to have a massive
impact. I was traumatized until I started training. I remember saying to you, this was so long ago, and I'll never forget this. I said to you, I think about my birth every day of my life. And you went, that's not normal. And in the way I was saying, and I was like, oh my God, I was. But it's taken me 12 years to heal until I had Dotty. 12 years. But this trauma shouldn't be normal. And what you going back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, the bullying that goes on within the system. Why aren't we examining why women are choosing to do this? Like, I had a client recently who free birthed. It was a BBA for me. I didn't even get there in time. And then I said, well, you've got a second degree tear. You need stitches if that's what you want to do. And she went into the hospital and they said, oh, so you're going free birth and you want us to clean up the mess. First of all, they said to her it's illegal. And I was like, whoa, educate yourself. No, it's not. Second of all, she's asked for help. And why aren't you questioning what happened to her? What happened to her to make her do that? I am totally for free birthing, depending where it's come from, right? If it comes from a genuine place of, you know, trust and understanding, and they're informed and this is what they feel they're meant to be doing, awesome. Mm-hmm. Go for it. But if you are free birthing because you feel it's the lesser of two evils, rather than going into a COVID-ridden hospital where people are going to bark orders at you, give you vaginal examinations and make you feel bad if you choose to not accept it, that's not a good reason to free birth. And in fact, it goes against birth physiology. If you're worrying and you're panicked, how is your body going to go into the state it needs to be in order to give birth?
Yeah, there is a lot of fear. In maternity, like fear, choosing a free birth out of fear or going into the hospital is probably not a good thing. But fear rules the whole system. You know, the women coming in are fearful, the staff working there are fearful, everyone's full of fear. And, you know, potentially, as you say, birth, if we know birth physiology, we know that will most likely lead to more complications just because everyone's so scared. You know, you need oxytocin. Everyone needs to be full of oxytocin. The staff, the birthing woman, and everyone there in that room for it to be more straightforward.
Yeah. Also, I must point out as well, you might hear oh, we're going to give her oxytocin. It's a synthetic form. It's called syntocin, and it doesn't reach the brain. It does not have the same effect apart from making you contract. So, but there are links in the description to various sources of information, such as AIMS and Birthright. So please feel free to look there so you can get information to make an informed decision. Kiki, before we go, tell everyone about your book. and how people can get in touch with you if they want to become a doula, etc.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, so I wrote a book, I think it's 5 years ago now, called The Secrets of Birth. And actually, when I wrote that, it was actually written to my two daughters. So I've got two girls, and I wanted to put everything down for them about childbirth. And a friend said to me, but why don't you publish it? Why don't you publish it as a book, because maybe everyone be interested to read it. So that was that book, and it's all written, as I say, to my two girls and what I wanted them to know about childbirth. And I then, when I published it, I added some little stories, also birth stories, but also doula stories of me supporting women. So that's one book. And then the book I published, or was published a year ago by Singing Dragon, is called Supporting Survivors of Sexual Abuse Through Pregnancy and Childbirth. And that is a book about the specific support that survivors need and should expect from their care providers. And that's written more for doulas, midwives, obstetricians.
Yeah.
And I had the help of 15 survivors to write that book, and for them to put in what wasn't helpful for them and what would be a lot more helpful, plus all the research around it. So that was a really tough book to write, actually. I know why no one has written it before now, when I have written it. So yeah, those are the two. And then I have my doula training is the Birth Bliss Academy. And also, you might not know, Nikita, but we've just set up a new organization for doulas in the UK called the Doula Association. At the moment, only doulas that have come through the Birth Bliss Academy training can join. But like you were saying, we want to protect the doula profession as such and keep it as straightforward, as simple as possible, while still having some kind of framework and like a gold standard that we feel doulas should uphold. But yet we don't want to get into that nitty gritty when you have too many rules. And, you know, you need a variety of women to be doulas, and men or people to be doulas, because everyone wants to find the person they feel more comfortable with to have with them during the birth. So yeah, I guess that's
and where can people find you?
So I'm on Facebook, Instagram, you know, there's a few accounts. There's the Birth Bliss Academy, and then Kiki Hansard, of course. So yeah, I've got a website, birthblissacademy.com, thedoulaassociation.org, because that's a not-for-profit organization, and I've got my own website, kikihansar.com. So yeah, there's a few places you can find me.
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure, and nice to see you again.
And you, Nikita, and good luck with the single and your campaign and everything.
Make sure you get everyone to buy it.
I will start sharing.
Thank you.